I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Should we still march? Should we still march?
Marching for more than 50 years.
I say pro, you say march. Pro, march, pro, march.
Americans won't stop until abortion is unthinkable.
And we know that in every abortion, one life is taken and at least one life is wounded.
The March for Life in Washington, D.C. is the largest human rights demonstration in the world. Now, the leader for more than a decade, Jeanne Mancini, will be stepping down, and Jenny Lichter will be taking the helm.
To be a mother, to have the capacity for motherhood, however you're living that out, is an invitation to the full human flourishing.
We bring you an exclusive interview with both of these incredible pro-life leaders as the next era of the March for Life steps off.
We will continue to march. We will continue to march until the human rights abuse of abortion is a thing of the past. We will march until abortion is unthinkable.
The annual event that brings tens of thousands to Washington, D.C. to be the voice for the voiceless, the March for Life. For more than 50 years, Advocates for Life have weathered through the cold, rain, and snow as a beautiful witness to the inherent dignity and worth of every human life. The leader for the March for Life for more than 10 years has been Jeanne Mancini. She is stepping down from this role, and Jenny Bradley Lichter will be taking the helm of the largest pro-life event in the world. Putting together the annual event is no easy task, nor is leading it. EWTN's Montse Alvarado sat down with Jeanne Mancini to get her thoughts on her more than 10 years as a leader of this massive movement.
Jeanne, thank you so much for being with us, especially in this transition moment where, after over a decade of defending life through the March for Life, you've decided to take a step down. Do you remember when you first came to the march, why you decided to join?
Oh, yeah. In short, it's because I felt like God asked me to. So I was blessed to be on the board, and really not for very long before the wonderful late, great Nellie Gray passed away. And after her passing, just in praying and thinking about it originally, I agreed to be kind of a transition president. And then really through prayer and just deeper discernment, left the job that I loved at Family Research Council doing public policy to take on this wonderful, wonderful endeavor of running the March for Life.
Under your leadership, the March for Life really has shifted. It's confronted the culture in a very positive way with stories of joy, stories of beauty, stories of courage. And you've brought some unlikely friends to the march to give their testimony and also to help out in bringing the word in places where it doesn't normally reach. When you think about your legacy and where you want the march to continue to go, how did you kind of lay the groundwork for the future?
I'm not sure I'd say I ever strategically sort of led the groundwork for the future. I was really trying to follow sort of the inspirations of God and just discernment and what have you. But I think probably when I look back on my time at the March, which it's just been the honor of a lifetime to lead this organization, I'm still sort of shocked that the Lord would call me to such a public role, which, by the way, I don't think I initially understood how public of a role it was. It sort of became that more along the way. But I love messaging, you know, and really what I love is aesthetics that are beautiful. And so whether that's through, you know, our theme every year or just how we speak about the inherent dignity of the human person, I've probably had the most fun in that area, trying to take kind of what can sometimes be framed as negative or polarizing and instead just show, you know, life is beautiful and the truth is beautiful. I mean, really, in a way, I'm taking my JP2 education and just showing it because, of course, St. John Paul II spent so many years talking about theology of the body, which is essentially like God's plan for the person, and the human person is inherently attractive, even when it comes to some of what are considered the harder church teachings. And when we can just show this for what it is, so show life in the womb for what it is, show choosing life for what it is, which might be hard, but it is inherently attractive and beautiful. And so hopefully my legacy is trying to pull on what is real, true, and good in people's hearts to draw them into the truth of the beauty of life and the pro-life movement, etc.
I like to say that Nellie Gray gave us the words. She coined pro-life rather than anti-abortion.
Yeah,
and you certainly have given us the images, the imagery, the stories that speak to our hearts about what it takes to be a pro-life society.
Mm-hmm.
You have seen many things happen very quickly in a little bit over a decade,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, shocking.
The overturning of Roe v. Wade, the rise of the state-level marches. I think it's remarkable to see that change. What have you seen on the ground? What would you say is was kind of brewing in your time at the march?
Mm-hmm. Wow, the landscape has shifted radically. So, gosh, in so many different ways. So, one of the ways is that at least the March for Life, that part of the pro-life movement, was very Catholic. Which is great. We're a non-sectarian organization, but we've certainly tried to open up to other denominations as well, whether it's through speakers or just even outreach or what have you. And so that's drastically changed, I would say, over the years. And we sort of walk in tandem with our brothers and sisters in Christ of different denominations, or just, you know, not even Christians, but, you know, people
right,
who are
deists.
Right,
the rise of secular
right.
pro-life, people
Absolutely.
Who just believe that life is
yeah.
good.
Right, right. So certainly that's changed. I think also just I'll never forget after a pro-life administration won in 2016, the media coverage of the March for Life radically shifted. So, you know, prior to that, we would have like we'd have some media coverage. There's no question every day, every year in January. But once we had the standing vice president of the United States come to the March for Life, everything shifted. We had all of the A-listers of the major media networks out there and just desperate to get great interviews. We were on the front page of the New York Times. So none of this had ever happened. And so, you know, I remember well the first time that we were ever mentioned in a press conference at the White House. And really, the March for Life hadn't been considered before. Certainly hadn't been discussed as being considered publicly. So that was exciting.
Yeah, the largest unreported international event in the world.
Yeah, right.
Because it truly is an international event. How has working in the pro-life movement, particularly in such a public way, affected your spiritual life? A lot of individuals in the pro-life movement say that when you start doing this work, spiritual attack is something that's very real. How has that manifested itself in your life?
Well, I agree with that. I think that first and foremost, the pro-life work is a spiritual battle that we have to engage with. And we don't need to be afraid about that because we have so much authority in the Lord. But, you know, there are these different human things as well. And so certainly it's intensified my spiritual life. And the way that you asked that question was being in the public. And so, for example, I tend to be shy by nature. And so it's hard to get your picture taken so often and just so many people wanting to speak with you, which is a total blessing. Like, you know, that's what an honor. But I can remember my spiritual director once just reminding me, and I'm no Mother Teresa, but reminding me Mother Teresa would offer every picture taken of herself for a soul in purgatory. And there are, I mean, some people, they love the spotlight. I probably wouldn't put myself in that category. And so so it's been, again, I'm kind of Moses with the speech impediment, but there I am. And with my little pictures, sometimes I'm offering them for different things going on in my life. But I say that, again, like astounded at all that God can do and all that he has done over the past 12 years.
Looking toward the future now, thinking about what comes next, what's your prayer, what's your hope for the march?
Oh, yeah. I'm just so delighted with Jenny Bradley Lichter, who will be assuming the reins of the March for Life. And she brings such a different set of gifts. And I think the set of gifts that the organization needs at this particular time in history. And so I see just the organization continuing to grow and grow and grow under our State March program. I think that we'll be even more of a movement leader in terms of strategically leaning into what's best for the pro-life movement, where we need to go. And so I'm excited to see how God uses Jenny.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Jeannie's successor will be Jenny Lichter. Jenny will be the first mother to serve as president of the March for Life. Take a listen to what she had to say about this new adventure.
Jenny, you bring something very different to the March for Life as its new president, the only one with small children. Now, your children and your family, they're not strangers to seeing you in a high-powered position, but this is a little different. How have they received the news, and are they on board?
Absolutely. It's really special for me and my whole family to be stepping into this role as a mom of three little kids. And my family are all really excited about it. My husband is a longtime marcher with me, and his support and prayers and his care for our family when I can't be there are what are going to make this possible for me. And my children, as marchers themselves, are so excited to be a part of this work. And we have talked a lot with them about how, although leading the March for Life will be my job, it's really our family's calling. So they know that taking on this calling means that I might not be home quite as often, although I certainly will make every effort to keep my schedule as consistent as possible. But we've also talked about how my older kids, the two who are in elementary school, will actually come on the road with me sometimes. They'll travel with me to state marches occasionally throughout the year. And they are so excited about that, to kind of dive into the pro-life movement in a new way. And I think that will really mitigate for them the sense that, oh, mom is leaving again. You know, instead it becomes kind of an adventure that we're embarking on together to try and do some good in the world and show the beauty and the joy of family life and of doing something like this with your children and your family alongside you.
You've mentioned that it's been beautiful to watch your children at the March for Life with their signs that say, I am the post-Roe generation. Now that we are in the post-Roe moment, is that more meaningful to you?
Absolutely. I mean, watching my daughter, who's now 8 years old, carry her little sign down the street at the March for Life a year or two ago, right after Dobbs, I am the post-Roe generation. I look at the photo of her that day, and it makes me tear up sometimes because it is so beautiful. And the idea that my daughters will grow up in a post-Roe world is so moving to me. It will open up so much more opportunity for them and let them have just a real, authentic sense of what it looks like to flourish as a woman. And I think they will hear a message that abortion is not necessary for their professional flourishing and their personal flourishing. And that women, in a way that I think wasn't meant by this slogan originally, really can have it all, right, in kind of the most robust and authentic way possible.
You're an attorney, and you're a Harvard-educated attorney, and you've had positions in government and also positions in leadership in the church. How does being an attorney kind of bring a different angle to what the March for Life represents or provides for its different partners in the country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the March for Life and really the whole pro-life movement, right, I think are being called to try and attain a new level of strategic savvy when it comes to legal strategy, political strategy, legislative strategy. And that's a world that I've been working in for the last 15 years in my legal and policy career. And I am really looking forward to sort of diving fully into that element of the work of the March for Life and trying to think through how we can continue to communicate with clarity and compassion, and also how can we kind of strategically move the needle in every way possible.
In your time working in the government, you really got the firsthand experience of the power of government agencies. Is that something that pro-lifers should really be leaning into and paying more attention to rather than less?
Absolutely, yes. Federal agencies have so much power, and they have so many different levers that they can use to accomplish their objectives, whether they're good objectives or, unfortunately, bad objectives. There's money that you can move around and distribute in different ways. There's policy and regulations, of course, that sort of bind certain entities, right, and what they are and aren't allowed to do. There is the power of the pulpit, essentially, just the bullhorn that the federal government has from the president on down through the agencies to push certain kinds of messages and use every tool at your disposal. So federal agencies, as I saw firsthand when I worked in the Justice Department in the White House, have an enormous impact on the lives of everyday Americans, including on pro-life issues.
Now, we know you as this high-powered attorney, but you also have a deep prayer life. How has prayer been a part of your preparation for this role?
Well, it's been really at the center of it from the very first moment that Jeannie Mancini asked me if I would consider taking on this role and trying to fill her really almost unfillable shoes. Right away after I walked out of that conversation, just sort of lifted it up to the Lord and said, wow, this is not something I saw coming. Lord, show me if this is where you want me to go. And it is just incredible, I think, when we bring ourselves fully in humility into prayer, how quickly and clearly the Lord can speak to our hearts. That was my experience in terms of discerning whether to take the role. And certainly since I said yes, I've been in prayer just every day that the Lord can lead my steps and my organizations and help us to be worthy messengers about the beauty and dignity of human life.
Under Jeannie's leadership, the pro-life march and the pro-life movement really opened itself up to groups that are secular, groups that are unlikely bedfellows, right? What will that look like, knowing that you do have this kind of deep spiritual accompaniment that feeds your pro-life mission?
Right, so my faith is really at the center of my pro-life commitment and will drive the way in which I lead the organization. But it is really important, and I think it's really beautiful that the pro-life coalition is really broad, and I think broadening all the time as the truth about the science of human development becomes better and better known, for example. So I am really looking forward to working alongside pro-life Americans of all beliefs and all stripes so that we can, each in our own slightly different, beautiful way, message about the beauty of human life.
What does victory look like for you? What could you see a day where the March for Life doesn't exist?
You know, I hope that day doesn't come. Of course, I fully believe that we will win the battle to build a culture of life in this country. I think we can have the peace and confidence that comes from working for a righteous cause. We'll get there. It might take a while. But even when that day comes, the March for Life is about so much more than trying to make abortion illegal, for example. It's about making abortion unthinkable so that women don't feel that they have to choose abortion. But it's also about celebrating the beauty of life and about coming together as a community of people who care about the dignity of the unborn and about supporting moms and wrapping them with love and just really taking encouragement from each other and lifting each other up and showing the country and the world that we are still here and we're never going to get tired of providing that witness to the beauty of human life. So I can't imagine a day when that witness would be something that we don't still need and want to have on the streets of Washington every January.
Well, the March for Life has certainly chosen well. Thank you so much, Jenny.
Thank you very much.
The March for Life is just around the corner. 2 years after the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the fight for the preborn is far from over. We bring you now both Jeannie and Jenny to talk about the transition of leadership at the March for Life.
Jenny and Jeannie, having both of you here is such a joy to see this transition from a great legacy coming out of the March for Life into this new era, post-Roe era, to really dive into where the culture is going and how life needs to be defended. I want to ask you both about this theme, life, why we march. Let's start with you, Jeannie. What does this theme mean to you?
Yeah. So every year when we're choosing a theme, we really try to speak into what's happening in the culture. Because, of course, the March for Life is where all of the different pro-life groups come together. And really choosing a theme gives us a springboard to impact whatever's happening. Like, what are the most pressing needs? And perhaps not surprisingly, I mean, people are discouraged right now. That's our sense, at least, that we've had this massive victory of the overturn of Roe, but we've lost at the state in a number of these ballot initiatives. We've seen elected officials separate themselves from this issue. And people are wondering even about the abortion numbers. In some states, it's up. In some states, down. So there are a lot of questions. We want to encourage marchers. We want to remind them that they're on the right side of history. One of the best ways to do that is to return to the basics, kind of pro-life 101. Why are we pro-life? And then also, why are you pro-life? You know, people's stories are so powerful. And for over 10 years at the march, we've had this hashtag for all of our social media endeavors, which is why we march. And that is really an invitation for marchers to tell their story. And every story is unique, and those stories are beautiful. And so that's really the hope with the theme.
It's a beautiful personal witness. Well, Jenny, walking into this for you, what does that resonate with you, that theme? Would you have chosen the same?
Yes, absolutely. I think Jeannie explained the theme wonderfully and why the organization chose it. For me personally, it's a really meaningful theme for my first March for Life at the organization because I have been a marcher since 2001. I've attended many marches for life in the past number of years. So I have a story about why I march and why I marched as a college student and a young professional with my husband when we were newlyweds, with my children more recently. And I'm excited to keep telling that story and to hear the stories from every marcher, because as Jeannie said, every marcher has a story just like mine.
Your hope in this theme is to renew energy and drive. And that, as you mentioned, is important now when you're seeing such a divided landscape mm-hmm. and so many fronts that you have to fight on. How does that kind of create a roadmap for what you want to do next?
Well, you know, in 2019, we began the State March Initiative, and little did we know that so many things would get lined up in place that ultimately Roe would be overturned just a few short years later. And so that State March Initiative has been all the more important. This year alone, we're in 17 states, wow. and we plan to be in all 50 states, certainly under Jenny's tenure, is my guess, soon. And so that is all the more important. As we rally people at the states. We need to continue rallying at the national level, both because we want to pass good legislation at the federal level, but also because the march is about more than just passing legislation. It's been famously said that culture is upstream of politics, and we want to change culture. We want to march until abortion is unthinkable.
Now, Jenny, you have seen, or you're walking into this post-Roe reality where the rise of abortion pills, especially at the state level too, seeing abortion pills being sent from one state to another, is just where the fight is going. How do you see that being something that you have to counter or address as the new head of the march? Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important for the pro-life movement and for the March for Life to keep reminding people that the abortion pill is so dangerous for women, and especially the way in which it's being distributed more and more often as regulatory parameters are being removed. Women are able to access the abortion pill without medical care and take it themselves at home. And that is so risky, and sometimes has tragic results, as we've seen in the news even just recently. And I think, too, it's really important for the pro-life movement and for our organization to keep making sure that women know what to do if they have started taking the abortion pill regime and they regret it and they want to turn it around and to save their baby, because that sometimes is possible to do if you do it in a timely way. And some states are starting to push back against that and trying to outlaw making the abortion pill reversal regime available. And that is such a tragedy and also really dangerous for women. So I think that's something we're going to be talking about, too.
It's important to think about these stories and why women get abortions. And it's something that the March for Life has done very well under Jeannie's leadership, telling us about these women, the circumstances, and what we can do to help, what the pro-life movement really exists to do. I recently had a woman tell me about the silent surprise baby abortions. Moms, maybe of 2 or 3 children, who get pregnant a couple of years down the line, maybe when their kids are in high school or middle school, and decide, this is just bad for my family. And they make the tragic decision of ending their baby's life. Research states that between 1/4 and 1/5 of American women who are already moms get abortions. And that number is only going up. Mm. What is going on here? Mm.
Yeah, this is horrific. And it's so sad to hear. So I think at its heart is a misunderstanding about sort of our plans for life and our control sort of over our life, and a sad sort of reflection upon if things are just, you know, a certain way and tidy, that my life will go a certain way. And I think perhaps one of the ways to counter this is some of the beautiful stories that we hear. I mean, even in my own family, my little brother was a surprise, you know, and he's just like all of the kids in our family. I mean, just so special. And now as a father of 3 himself. But there are so many wonderful stories of people being surprised, you know, facing, as we say, an unexpected pregnancy. And I think what's most important is just to recognize that, you know, choosing abortion, it's not like taking any eraser to something and just erasing it and making it not there, you know, temporarily. It's actually taking a life and ultimately impacting the life of the mom as well. And so we'll do our part to get the word out there about this sad trajectory.
Is there something that you want to add about the way that the pro-abortion movement kind of limits your ability to think about what could be, rather than just what is?
I think one of the most, really the most tragic things about pro-abortion rhetoric is the messaging to young women that motherhood holds you back and that it's at odds with personal and professional flourishing and fulfillment. and that, you know, maybe having two or three kids is okay, but if you have any more, then, you know, then your life is going to fall apart. And I hope that my own experience as a mom, as I step into this more visible role, can be a lived counterexample to that, a counter witness. I have three kids, 10 and under, and they are a part of my flourishing and fulfillment. They're certainly not at odds with it whatsoever.
Now, Jeannie, Jenny brings something very different in terms of skill set and background to the March for Life. What is your hope for her, knowing that this is a difficult task, a spiritually challenging task, and one where you are countercultural just by saying yes to the call?
Yeah. Cardinal Dolan one time said to me so beautifully, it meant so much to me, that Nelly was what was needed at that time for culture as well, and also just for running the March for Life, and that in the present moment when I was having the conversation with him, I was what, you know, my personality, sort of how I messaged, etc., was really what was needed. And, you know, there is this beautiful saying, the Holy Spirit gives to the church what she needs for a particular time period. And the March for Life being a pro-life organization, I think Jenny is just that, the particular phenomenal skill set that she has, her brilliance, her motherhood, so many wonderful things about her, I think, are really what the organization needs now.
When you think about the future of the March and what you're inheriting, is there something that makes you nervous or excited?
Oh, gosh, I'm so excited. I mean, I've been coming to the March for Life for so many years, and it's so special to me. And I have admired first Nellie Gray when I first started attending the March, and then Jeannie for so many years have just watched her and admired her leadership of the March at the event itself and in the media and all the ways in which she has led in the pro-life movement. So I am honestly just floored that this call came to me, and I'm so grateful to Jeannie for trusting me and asking me to consider this, and to the Lord for opening my heart to saying yes to it. And I just am so excited and humbled by this opportunity. I really can't wait to get started.
It's great to chat with both of you.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
We are so thankful for Jeannie's leadership during the last 14 years, and we are so excited for Jenny as she embarks on a new career path. We are praying for both of them, and we ask you to pray for them as well. EWTN is dedicated to bringing you complete coverage of this annual march. Our live coverage starts at 9:30 a.m. on Friday, January 24th. We will have a team of reporters out at the march, bringing you all the action, as well as a host of anchors, including myself, to dive into all of the angles of the pro-life movement in studio, along with special guests throughout the broadcast. Be sure to tune in. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.